From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Before we go any further, will you commit today to working with the Trump administration and ICE to ensure that the violence we've seen in Los Angeles does not occur in Chicago or anywhere else in our state? Yes or no?
Thank you, Congresswoman Miller. We work every day with the federal government
yes
to keep
no,
our
sir.
Streets safe.
Will you commit to working with
we
the Trump
We do
administration?
All the time work with the federal government and law enforcement
Okay,
constantly.
I'm taking that as a yes. In light of the crimes that I have mentioned, do you stand by your policy of tying the hands of Illinois law enforcement? Yes or no, sir?
You know, Congresswoman Miller, I am
yes
not
no,
going
sir.
To be lectured to by somebody
I'm
who extols the
my time.
Of
I'm
Adolf
my
Hitler,
time,
of somebody
In
who has
2024,
allowed the pardoning
after,
of January 6th.
I'm reclaiming my time.
Now, that is the Congresswoman Mary Miller from Central Illinois, a Republican, and the Democratic Governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker. Pritzker was called to speak before a congressional committee this week. It got heated at times, not just with Miller, but with others. We'll talk about that and more coming up. The Trump administration pushing for additional ICE arrests. They've even mobilized the National Guard and the military to deal with California protests. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie has also been a longtime Statehouse reporter and observer. And our guest this week, Heather Sharone, a reporter for WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Heather, it's always good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me back.
So let's start with the governor. Heather, you watched this. It was a pretty long hearing. The governor was there sitting with New York's governor, Kathy Hochul, and also Tim Walz from Minnesota. They were in Washington. As I said, it got testy at times. So fill us in on why they were called in the first place. What was this all about?
Well, all three states have laws on the books that prohibit local law enforcement agents from helping federal agents enforce federal immigration laws. Now, sometimes you hear this shorthanded as that Illinois, New York, and Minnesota are sanctuary states. And basically what that means is that unless you have a judicial warrant, local law enforcement isn't going to help the federal agents find people here who are undocumented and that the federal government wants to deport. This has been a long source of controversy dating all the way back to the 1980s. If you remember, back in March, Mayor Brandon Johnson and a bunch of other Democratic mayors were also called before this very same committee to answer many of the same questions. But what set yesterday's hearings apart, or Thursday's hearing apart, was really that it got sidetracked and overtaken by events. Of course, this week we've seen President Donald Trump nationalize the California National Guard over the objections of Governor Gavin Newsom and Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass. A federal judge late Thursday night ruled that that was improper, although his ruling was immediately stayed by an appellate court. On Friday, the first U.S. Marines moved into Los Angeles, even though the last couple of days have seen much smaller and much more peaceful protests after the large protests that got out of hand in some cases in downtown Los Angeles. So there were lots of questions about those issues and what the governors would do if federal officials made good on their threats to arrest officials like Governor Newsom. Governor Pritzker seemed to be prepared for that question, and he basically said he'd like to see the federal government try it, and that he would rather be targeted personally rather than the people of Illinois who fear deportation and being separated from their families. It was a long hearing, and there were a lot of Republicans on that committee that wanted to sort of score political points. There were also Democrats on that committee that really sort of sought to highlight the human toll of the ongoing mass deportation effort. I don't think anybody sort of changed their mind on what it means to be sort of a sanctuary state and sort of whether those laws, you know, are they help, as Governor Pritzker argued, or if they hurt, as nearly every Republican argued. But it is just another skirmish in this long ongoing conflict between Illinois and the federal government.
Yeah, so Charlie, immigration still seems to be an issue where Donald Trump may have the upper hand politically. A lot of people still feeling as though they want to see more of a crackdown on immigration. But I have seen some polling recently saying many are worried about the way that the Trump administration is going about things. So it seems to me he has a real possibility here of overstepping what people want to see, and this could really hurt him and the rest of the Republicans politically.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. The notion that, for example, that the federal government can kind of unilaterally declare that we have this invasion, this foreign invasion, and therefore we can send in our troops and we can supplant local officials who say, no, we can handle it ourselves. I mean, that's kind of scary. That's kind of the in a sense, that's what you would expect some autocrat to say, some dictator, that I can control everything. And the hearing yesterday was basically, it was a clown show. And that's what it was intended to do. The chair of the committee, Representative James Comer, a Kentucky Republican, for example, he accused Pritzker of turning Chicago into, quote, a haven for drugs and crimes. But in fact, and Heather, you pointed this out in your story, homicides dropped during the first 5 months of this year by 28%. Shootings dropped by 35%. So this notion that Chicago is being racked by crime and drugs and all that, that's total nonsense. But it was what the Republicans were trying to do. They put on this dog and pony show. I think Pritzker referred to it as a political circus. And it was to score points and to get snippets that they could put on social media and that they could use for campaign purposes. There was no seriousness about it.
Well, they're definitely playing politics, having the hearing the way that happened. But Heather, you pointed out, I mean, Democrats also saw opportunities here to score points. And J.B. Pritzker is trying to raise his national profile. A lot of talk about him running for president, possibly at some point. He seemed to be able to, seemed like he was ready, for, like you said, for a lot of the questions. How did you think he handled himself?
I think that it is a setup that is inherently designed to put witnesses on their back feet. You know, each congressperson had a limited amount of time for questions. There was really no opportunity for Governor Pritzker to sort of push back and say, hey, that's false. It's just not set up to be a dialogue. Several of the Republican members have a longstanding practice of sort of trying to hit these witnesses with, you know, yes or no questions. And oftentimes they're very loaded questions. But, you know, the conflict at the heart of this hearing was this notion that President Trump campaigned on, that there were millions and millions of undocumented immigrants in the United States who were also criminals. And that was never true and is never true. That has meant that just in the last couple of weeks, the last month or so, the federal government has really shifted the way that they are sort of enforcing that mass deportation effort by going after people who are here, perhaps undocumented and are undocumented, but are otherwise living law-abiding life. And that is where we have seen the backlash. That's what sparked the protests in Los Angeles. And that is what Pritzker and the Democratic members of the committee tried to emphasize, that while he says, I agree, if you're here and you're not here properly and you commit a crime, you should be deported. We agree on that. The issue is whether the federal government should be targeting people who are otherwise here with jobs and families and have become parts of communities. And that, I think, is really sort of what they should have been talking about, that conflict, but got lost in sort of the political drama of it all.
So, Heather, what is the mood in the immigrant communities, let's say in Chicago right now? I know that for several months now, people have been concerned. There had been talk, a lot of people not going to work, not going to school, for fear that they could be snatched by ICE agents at some point. I'm guessing that has ramped up even more now.
I think that's right. I think that, you know, we saw initial raids soon after President Trump took office in January. Pritzker criticized those raids several times in yesterday's hearings, noting that television's Dr. Phil accompanied ICE agents on those to make some sort of television special for his network. But then it seemed to sort of die down. And I think people sort of started resuming a little bit more of their normal lives, which changed with the first raids in Los Angeles that, as I said, that sparked the protests and the unrest. And I think that the level of fear never went away in Chicago and immigrant communities, but it has certainly been ratcheted up significantly, especially because federal officials have begun arresting people who appear for either scheduled or unscheduled court appearances, which they're required to as part of their agreement to remain in the country legally while they pursue asylum claims or other claims that they should not be deported. And I think that's what's really changed. And I think everyone in Chicago who is undocumented or a member of their family is undocumented feels exceedingly at risk at this moment.
Now, Charlie, you can't blame them for feeling that way. Even if it hasn't happened in their neighborhood, per se, it's been more of what they're seeing on television happening elsewhere.
Yeah, and as Heather pointed out, some of these are folks who are trying to comply with what they're supposed to do, and they show up for this hearing, and they get dragged away. And so it's sort of like a catch-22. Well, under your requirements, if you want to move ultimately towards citizenship, you have to attend these hearings and you have to show up and plead your case. And then when you do, you get dragged away by the stormtroopers. So it's as I say, it's kind of a catch-22, and it's got to be, it's hard for someone like me who's never experienced that kind of fear, that kind of worry that people in my family are going to be snatched away for no good reason. And it's hard for someone like me, I expect many others, to appreciate the absolute dread that must occur in these families, knowing that any moment my husband or my father, my grandfather, my kids can be taken away from me and sent off who knows where, and I have little or no recourse. So that's, as I said, that's got to be extremely frightening.
What about this possibility, again, of these raids? We're hearing, at least where I'm at here in Springfield, Heather, and you being in Chicago, I'm sure you have better intelligence on this, but there has been a lot of talk, like we could see some major raids almost happening imminently in the city, maybe similar to what Los Angeles experienced.
That's right. NBC News reported late Tuesday that within 48 hours, Chicago and another of other democratically run cities would be targeted by ICE with military grade equipment, including tanks. So far, I think it's about 48 hours later, there's not been any sign of that. But the federal officials, under the best of circumstances, do not normally enjoy collaborating and giving local officials a heads up in many cases. Tension is very high between Chicago, Illinois, and the Trump administration. So it's not clear whether those raids will materialize, even though Mayor Brandon Johnson's chief of staff, Christina Passione Zayas, said the administration was bracing for that. But it's not clear whether the city had any additional information from the feds rather than what was just reported by NBC News. And I think that, you know, this has been a really hard story to cover personally, and it's been hard for all of our colleagues. And, you know, I think it's part of the problem is wanting to inform people so that they can take the steps that they believe is necessary to keep themselves and their families safe, and also not alarming people unnecessarily. And exactly where that line is, I think, is an ever-shifting target and requires hard, hard, careful work.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler and Heather Sharone with Chicago Tonight. Charlie, we mentioned earlier what's happening in California, Donald Trump nationalizing the National Guard there, taking control of that. A lawsuit is still pending. He's also brought in some troops. Chances of that happening here in states like Illinois, like we were just talking about, seem to be growing, even though we've heard nothing as we sit down to record this show on a Friday morning.
Yeah, I think it's quite likely to happen, and it'll happen tomorrow, Saturday, when there's a nationwide protest of people who are opposing Donald Trump's authoritarian ways. There's going to be like 1,000 rallies all across the country, mostly in states that tend to be blue states, but also in some of the red states. And so these are people who are going to come out and say, we don't like what's going on. And in Chicago, that is a likely target for the troops to be sent in and for Trump to say, I'm nationalizing the Illinois National Guard, and we're going to send them in to put down these rioters. And the fact of the matter is that the Chicago police are able to contain things for themselves. One of the things I think the mayor pointed out was in the Democratic National Convention, there were protests, but there was not any level of violence. It was all handled very well by the Chicago Police Department. People were allowed to enact or to protest, to exercise their First Amendment free speech rights. And they did it in a restrained manner. And you didn't see the kind of violence and outbreak and what would you say, total riot that the Trump administration and his minions like to say is happening in Los Angeles. I saw a quote somewhere that 99.9% in Los Angeles is just as peaceful as it always was. It's just in the one downtown area where there was some unrest. So yeah, I would fully expect that the tanks will roll in Chicago on tomorrow.
Well, and that being Saturday for those maybe listening at a different time, but Heather, has the governor weighed in on this possibility? Certainly seeing what's happened in California and what Gavin Newsom's response has been, has Pritzker made comments on this?
He has said that there is no reason for the federal government to deploy either National Guard troops or Marines in Illinois to handle protests. He has said that he has full authority to deploy the National Guard if necessary. And if you remember correctly, he did so during the racial justice protests that were triggered by the police murder of George Floyd. So he is no stranger to these sort of very difficult decisions when these sort of environments erupt. But he said that it is a grave, grave threat to democracy where you can have a president sort of overstep the authority of a governor in a specific state. I think that was part of sort of what made Thursday's hearing so different than other congressional hearings, because you had Democratic governors like J.B. Pritzker being able to sort of go on the offense and say, this is not appropriate. And it's not clear to me whether the Trump administration will make different decisions now that at least one federal judge has found their attempt to do this in Los Angeles or in California unconstitutional.
Now, Charlie, it seems to me this, and as somebody who not only worked in media for many years like yourself, but also taught media and journalism for students, it seems to me that it's this divide we have over how we're consuming our news, which is really a problem in these situations. Fox News, many other right-wing outlets showing a lot of violent scenes, which even though they may be happening, even in some cases in California, may be very isolated to make it look as though the city is on fire there, whereby what I'm seeing elsewhere does not show that level of violence that would require this type of response. So it seems as though just the divide in the country and the divide among how we consume our news is playing into this a lot.
Yeah, I think that's true. Back in the days when I was a reporter for the Sun-Times and the Springfield Bureau, there was not this need to be tweeting every little thing that happened. There was not social media to contend with. It was a matter of you actually were able to cover something, get background, find out what really happened, that you could present an accurate picture and then write a story and send it in to the paper. Nowadays, everything is, I would say, it's heightened by the social media desire to get something out there immediately, and if it's right, that's great. And if it's not, well, that's the way it goes. And also the polarization, the fact that people tend to be in silos and you don't have the ability to what would you say, to communicate well with each other, to understand someone else's point of view. And the fact that legacy media is declining in its ability to reach people, I think also contributes to it. I don't think this is good for the country.
Heather, I'll let you weigh in on that as well. Your thoughts on that?
I think that we've seen time and time again that what sort of sees the algorithm on social media is something that makes people angry, or it makes people outraged, or it makes people have sort of a visceral emotional reaction. You know, people who aren't out there to, you know, tell people the truth and let people sort of know what's going on, they can take advantage of that for their own political means. And that, you know, is not concentrated on one end of the political spectrum, but I agree with Charlie that it's very, very dangerous. And also, I think he's right about sort of the news media's own sort of bias toward things on fire, so to speak. There's a very famous picture from the 2020 protests where, you know, there's essentially a small piece of paper or something else on fire that is being surrounded by dozens of photographers zooming in on the flames. And of course, if you just saw those pictures, you would think, gosh, everything's on fire. But if you zoom out, it's literally just sort of a little bit of trash on fire. And it is our job as journalists to sort of sort through that, but it gets harder to do on social media.
And add AI, and who knows what we're going to wind up with. Heather, also did want to get an update from you. The Department of Justice has launched an investigation into Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson's administration. What's that about? What's happening with it?
Well, at an event at a church in Chicago's Black communities, Johnson said, as he has very frequently, that he is proud of how many Black Chicagoans he has hired to lead the city's departments and how that they are dedicated to make the city a more equitable place to live. Speaking of social media, those remarks caught the attention of some of the pro-Trump accounts who amplified them. And less than 12 hours later, the Department of Justice launched an investigation into what they said was an indication that sort of, you know, desire to hire Black people was impermissible under the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which of course was approved by Congress and signed into law and renewed by many presidents of both parties, was designed to sort of equal the playing field between Black people and white people after decades of slavery and Jim Crow and legal segregation. We did hear from the city's top lawyer that the city is in conversation with the Department of Justice about the information that they're looking for and that they are being responsive to that inquiry. However, the mayor said that he said that probe is fraudulent and wrong, and it very much remains to be seen whether it will actually have any actual impact on the city of Chicago. I did an analysis of the mayor's appointments and his senior leadership team, and I found that while nearly half are Black and more than half are female, it's really not out of line with the city's overall population, which of course is a third white, a third Black, and a third Latino. Noting, and the Tribune had a great analysis of the president's appointment and found that nearly 85% of his cabinet level appointments were white.
And just also with just a minute or so left here, what is the situation with transit in the Chicago area? We know the lawmakers left Springfield without coming up with an agreement there, and there's a fiscal cliff coming for all these transit agencies. Where do we stand with that?
Transit agencies, specifically the CTA, has started planning for the best case scenario where state lawmakers come through with the money that they need to avoid the fiscal cliff and keep operating pretty much as business as usual. And then they're also developing a budget for if the state comes through with some money, but not as much money as they have asked for. And then they're also coming up with a response to what they say would be a doomsday scenario where they get no additional money from the state. Now, if that worst case scenario scenario happens, that would mean cuts of nearly 40%, which would mean dozens of bus lines would likely have to be eliminated, along with whole CTA train lines. So they are hoping for, if not the best, at least not the worst, while preparing for what, as I said, they believe would be doomsday.
And Charlie, just real quick, but they've got to do something, it appears, and probably sooner than later, we might see them back this summer.
Yeah, I think there's probably negotiations and discussions ongoing among the various entities involved in this, particularly on the legislative side. And I would not be surprised at all for them to announce we finally come to an agreement, both on the management side, how to restructure the organizations, and also on the financial side, how we're going to pay for the money needed. And once that agreement is reached, I would not at all be surprised but the Senate, if the Senate president and the House speaker or the governor called a special session to come in and pass this legislation and ease the minds of people who rely on the CTA or Metra or Pace bus to get where they need to go.
All right, time now for our notes from the field. And Heather, we'll start with you.
Well, Mayor Brandon Johnson had a weekly news conference on Wednesday where, of course, he was asked about what's been going on in Los Angeles. And I was really struck by his reaction, which was to tell the people of Chicago that he was counting on them in this moment to resist what the Trump administration was doing. And it was, I think, a moment where I think that it became clear that as much peril as Chicago is in because of Trump's clear animus towards the city, it's also a moment for Chicago to sort of come together in some way. And, you know, it's not often, at least it used to not be often, to hear a mayor of Americans, of a major American city calling on its residents to resist the president, especially knowing that there are large protests happening, the plan to happen this weekend, and that there have been protests in some form nearly every night this week against the president's mass deportation efforts.
All right. And Charlie.
Secretary of State Alexei Janulius announced this week his office is going to conduct an audit of the state's automated license plate reader system after apparently the system was used illegally by law enforcement to track down a woman for an abortion care related matter. Now, license plate readers can be used by law enforcement to investigate violent felonies, missing person cases, but the state law also prohibits use of the data for matters including aiding in detection or investigation of a person based on their immigration status. And the Secretary of State also said that there were more than 250 searches for immigration-related matters in this Northwest Suburban Mount Prospect system. The private vendor that provides these license plate readers has shut off access for out-of-state authorities, Janulius said. And he's also said that he has contacted Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul to investigate the matter.
That's our time for State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Heather Sharone with Chicago Tonight. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.